It's time to turn your garden into a smart garden on News Radio 830 WCCO. Smart Gardens, an hour of expert advice and answers to all of your lawn and gardening questions. You can call 989-9226 or text us at 81807. Now, here's Denny Law with this week's Smart Garden.
Yes, indeed, and I am joined by Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota and the Abiders.
And we're feeling smart today.
Yeah, we are. You are. And you, because it's your job.
I think sometimes you could do this show.
No, not really. Not at all. Julie is the expert, as you know, if you're familiar with our Smart Garden show. Brought to us, by the way, by our friends at By the Yard Outdoor Furniture. And one of these days, we'll get to use that outdoor furniture once the snow
leaves. Oh, it's coming around.
It is,
of
course.
It's coming around.
Yeah, it'll be here. Somebody once said, don't wish your life away, Mr. Long.
That's right. That's right. Right. Let it move too fast.
Yes. And if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, I know it's two above zero, but it doesn't matter. We hardy Midwesterners love our gardening.
Yeah. Maybe it's a fantasy world a little bit, but
no, really.
We think a lot about it. Yeah, we spend a lot of time thinking
and
about plants.
Not just the garden, but yards as well. A lot of people enjoy working in their yards.
I'm already answering lawn questions.
I bet you are. And will today, too. If you have If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie, by all means, call it in or text it, and we've cleared the lines from last hour. 651-989-9226. Or if you prefer, send Julie a text, 81807, 81807. And I know I'm hearing lots of good things about the Arboretum these days.
Oh, it's beautiful out there. Boy, they've got the flower show going on, and it's it has a global theme where you have a little passport and you go from country to country, and they've created these beautiful exhibits from different countries, so with a kind of a theme against it. So it's awesome place to be.
It really is. We'll talk
about it. Smells wonderful out there.
Yeah.
Man, it's fantastic.
I just saw I can't remember which TV station it was, did a story about that.
Yeah.
And it's
very
just
photogenic.
It really is, yeah. 651-989-9226, Lawn and Garden Talk. Last week, texter says, what is it called? Thistle, killing thistles.
Oh, yeah.
Apply one teaspoon. I'm not sure what they're talking about here. It's cheap and it works great. I'm not sure one teaspoon of what? Agriculture something.
One teaspoon. White salt.
Oh, is that all it is?
Agriculture white salt.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that is. Yeah. Well, you know, the problem with home remedies is it might work for one person, but it's not research-based. And that being said, we have a former faculty member, Jeff Gilman, who actually did run some of these tests of some of these home remedies. Many of them he was able to say, no, this isn't really going to work. The unfortunate thing about home remedies, too, is sometimes you add, because there isn't really a recipe for it or something that shows long-term effect or negative effect, the problem is you can add too much of something. So here they're talking about, I don't know what white agricultural salt is. I'm not really sure what they mean by that. But if you keep adding salt to soil, eventually nothing is going to grow where it is. So the best thing for thistles is really preventing them, first of all, by improving your soil and then growing plants that will outcompete the thistles, but then also really hand digging the thistles out, getting in there when they're small, not waiting until they get too big. And then also resorting to chemicals, too.
Yeah,
research-based, yeah.
I remember it was years ago. We do once in a while get home remedies for things.
Right.
And we always get, no joke about Creeping Charlie, but I mean, when we used to get calls and still do about Creeping Charlie, somebody suggested, and I know you've heard this, using borax.
Oh, yeah.
But
Mule Team.
I also heard that if you do that, you could sterilize your soil.
Right, right, because borax has boron in it, the element boron, and boron stays in the soil. And if you add too much, eventually nothing will grow in that location because of that boron. It's a toxicity.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes the home remedies, and again, sometimes they work for one person, but we can't promote those because we don't know for sure that they work for everybody.
All right. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, now is your chance. This is the hour we do that. It's called a Smart Garden Show, brought to us by the Yard Furniture. Bill, I believe, is calling in this morning with a question. Bill, what is your question?
If I have some hibiscus trees in the house and they're getting large, can I plant them outside this summer? And will they make it through the winter?
They will not make it through the winter, but you can certainly put them outside. A lot of people will move them out to a patio or deck, but you could transplant it into your garden and then dig it up in the fall and put it back in a pot and bring it back indoors. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's doable that way.
That would be a tropical landscape.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Thank you, Bill. 651-989-9226. I see a line is open. If you'd like to use it to ask your question to Julie. Julie, texter says, is now a good time to prune apple trees and pear trees?
We're getting close. The recommendation is in March, and so we're right there. And yes, then I would say you could start pruning anytime in March.
Okay. That's one thing I believe we'll probably be getting more questions about regarding trimming.
And we also have on our extension site under our fruit section, we have a series of three apple pruning videos that you can watch before you go out to prune. So take a look at that. It's at extension.umn.edu and go to Yard and Garden and then just go to fruits. And you can see Annie Claude, our extension educator in vegetable and fruits, showing us how to do that with Dave Bedford and a couple other folks from the Arboretum.
All right. We got to mention that site from time to time because you guys have really put in a lot of work over the last year.
Yeah, it's been a labor of love, but it's getting better all the time, and we're adding more and more information.
And what is it again, exactly?
extension.umn.edu.
Excellent. 651-989-9226 is our phone number. Call Julie or text Julie, 81807. Let's see who's next. Mary is calling from Egan, I believe. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Morning.
I went on vacation, and when I came home, my house plants needed a little bit of water, and I picked up the jug, what I thought was water, and it was really apple cider, or apple vinegar, distilled white vinegar.
Oh, my gosh.
So my plant's a bit droopy. Is there anything I can do to salvage it?
I would flush your plants with clear water. So put them in the sink or the shower, depending on the size of the plant, and just run some clear water through there to flush that soil. That's about all you can do, other than you could try repotting, but I think you're going to solve your problem by just flushing it out.
Flushing it out?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Yep, good luck, Mary. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yikes.
Vinegar. I can see how if you're using vinegar jugs with water,
what
an easy mistake that is. Text number is 81807. What are some good plants to grow under a deck overhang where there is shade? Somebody wants to know.
So that's going to be a very dry, shady spot. Certainly there's our tried and true hosta. There's a lot of tough hostas that will grow under there. There's a great ground cover, a native ground cover called wild ginger. That's a terrific ground cover to grow in a dry area. We also have, if you want a plant that's going to spread quite a bit and stay low, it's called Virginia waterleaf. That's another native. And we also have ostrich ferns, which are quite tall, so it depends how tall that space is. They get to be about 5 feet tall. But they would be great. Other ferns would be optional as well, possible options. So you're looking primarily for dry shade. We have a book called The Best Plants for 30 Tough Sites. It's a PDF. You can find that also on our extension webpage. And it's under growing plants, and it's growing plants for special situations, I think it is. So you can find it under perennials.
Some good info. I've seen
that. It's great info, yeah. And I think there's a dry shade page. It's lists of plants. It explains a little bit about the difficult location. Sometimes it's like alkaline soil or dry clay, heavy clay. And it was written by Master Gardeners in celebration of the 30 years of the program, which was now 15 years ago,
wow.
I think. Mary actually organized it along with some other faculty. So that's a great book. And you can just Google in Best Plants 30 Tough Sites and it'll pop right up. You can download it.
Julie, we need to take a quick break here. So I'm alerting our phone callers. Stay there. We'll be right back. Just quick break. And texters, you can join in too. 81807. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Hello,
who was
hello,
that guy?
Hello. I don't know. Echo.
So scary.
Julie Weisenhorn is in studio with us, helping you out, answering your lawn and garden questions by phone and by text. And as we head to the phones, I want to mention, too, that folks that don't know, you and some colleagues are in a band called The Abiders.
Yeah, the boys and I.
The boys and you.
Yeah, yeah. Carlos and Larry and my brother Andy and our buddy John. And we are playing next Saturday out at Billy's in Rockford, right on 55 as you come into Rockford.
Now, somebody's going to say, well, what kind of music do you guys play?
We call it Bluesabilly.
Okay. It's fun stuff.
But it's like Americana. You know, it's a mixture of blues and rock and roll. And
Yeah,
so it's a lot of fun. Yeah, we've been rehearsing hard. In fact, we have rehearsal tomorrow.
What time? One week from today.
1 week from today, February 23rd. I think we start about 8 o'clock. We play to midnight.
Outstanding. All right.
It'll be a gas.
We'll mention that again before you leave us. In the meantime, back to work, Lawns and Gardens. Who has been waiting there?
Yes.
Alex is calling, I believe, from Richfield. Alex, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Hi there. Yeah.
Hello.
So I just bought a house that has no gardens what to speak of, and I'm really looking forward to starting a Minnesota or Midwest native garden. And any
nice.
Tips you have for that would be great.
Yeah, Alex, we have for starters, we have a webpage on our extension.umn.edu yard and garden site, and it is called Native Plants, and it has recommendations for trees in Minnesota. And it's broken up by region, so you can find yours, the central area or wherever it is. Also, we have a really good publication on native. It's a blog, actually, on native grasses, the benefit. That's written by Mary Meyer, who's on the team here for Smart Garden. And she's been doing a lot of research on the benefits of grasses to Lepidoptera larvae. So these are the larvae of butterflies and moths. And some of those that are endangered. So if we can be planting those grasses for food and habitat for these important insects, that would be great. So there's also great information on flowers for bees and pollinators on that site as well. And lists of we have a good list that's a good starter list called Plants for Minnesota Bees that was written by our bee squad. And you can just Google that title and that will pop right up. So there's a good place to start. I would also recommend looking at like a landscape design workshop. Jim Culkins, my buddy, and I are teaching one right now, but we'll be teaching a one-day class in Rochester on April 6th, I believe. And then we may be teaching another one later in the season. And that's so you can look at that. We do that through the Minnesota State Horticulture Society. So you can go to northerngardener.org. And look at classes there. And then, of course, at the Arboretum, there's a ton of different classes to take, too. So if you're interested in getting a little bit of design information and then learning about native plants, you can look for information there. And then, again, look at our website.
Some good resources, for sure.
Yeah, I could go do a whole show on resources.
I bet, yeah. Alice, good luck. Yeah.
Yeah, good luck with that. That's a great plan for the year, is to establish that Minnesota native garden.
And your bee squad is really an A squad for bees, though.
That's right. It's
okay.
B-E-E.
I wanted to clarify
not just the letter B.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They're beyond A. They're A++ people.
Mickey's calling from Minnetonka. Mickey, you're on with Julie here on CCO. Mickey? Hello, hello. Oh, can't do it, Dennis.
Which line?
3, 4. Mickey.
There she is.
Oh, hi. Sorry.
Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you, Mickey?
Can you hear us?
Oh, yep. I can hear you.
Excellent.
We've been walking and admiring a catalpa tree for quite a while. And in the fall, I harvested some of the seeds from one of the pods. And I put those seeds in our refrigerator.
Okay.
And was wondering, what do I do now?
You can go ahead and, let's see. I'm trying to think. They've probably gone through a cold enough period, and you could probably try potting them up and choose the best seeds. Make sure they're nice and, you know, good shape, and they don't have any mold or anything on them. And then, just put them in a pot with some soil and moisten it. I'm not sure with those seeds if they have a hard seed coat on them. I haven't looked at a catalpa seed. I don't think they do. So I think just watering them should probably cause that seed to expand and rehydrate and then pop out that first root. So, That's great. I love catalpas. Their flowers are like orchids, and they have those amazing, huge leaves, gigantic leaves. Give it lots of room wherever you end up planting that tree.
Yeah.
They're big trees.
They are big. Thanks, Mickey.
Cool.
Tim is in Ramsey. Tim is in Ramsey with a question for Julie. Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. We have a condition going on with either the white or the bur oak trees on our property. And what it is in the spring, the trees look healthy. Come about August, mid-August, they'll start browning the leaves. And by September, we could be raking the leaves. And it's not oak wilt, that I know.
Okay.
Because it's not, doesn't affect the red oaks, and we're well aware of the oak wilt up in our area.
Sure.
But this is just the white or bur oaks, and some of them are very large trees. And so, and then the leaves that are left late in the year, they'll typically hang on all winter long. A red oak typically will do that, but the white oaks, you know, generally shed their leaves or whatever. But so doing a little bit of reading, it sounds like it may be something like bur oak blight or something like that. Do you know anything about that?
That would be a hard thing to figure out on the radio, but, you know, we often will recommend a certified arborist coming out, particularly with mature trees like that, because they're so valuable, not only from a property value standpoint, but just the aesthetics. And so I'd recommend having a certified arborist come out and take a look at your trees. They'll examine them and assess them for their health. If you have photos at all of the leaves, that would be nice to have there for them to take a look at. It could be anthracnose. It could be bur oak wilt. I'm not really sure. I'm not a pathologist, so I can't answer that question exactly. But I would say it's well worth it to get an arborist out there to take a look at those plants.
We have good ones here, too.
We have excellent ones. And we have a site or a webpage on our extension site called How to Hire a Certified Arborist. It's under our Trees and Shrubs section. And that would be a great publication to check out. It has some good questions that you can that will help you to ask some good questions as well.
Good. All right. Julie, we need to take a break. We have another half hour of the show to go, so don't go away. More Lawn and Garden Talk. Your questions by phone and by text for Julie. And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by our friends at By the Yard Patio Furniture, family-run business in Jordan, Minnesota. We'll talk about that coming up. Julie, you wanted to kind of backtrack a little.
Yeah, I want to go back to the oak question, the gentleman who has the bur oaks. We have a great tool that is on the website called What's Wrong With My Plant. It's a diagnostic tool. We have a couple of other ones, too. What insect is this, and is this plant a weed? But in that, you can go ahead and select whatever the plant is. So in this case, it would be oaks. And then it gives you a whole list of choices of the symptoms that you see. Like he mentioned the brown leaves that drop early. And in looking at that, and I went to that, and I came up with – I looked at the bur oak blight, which has a great fact sheet that's associated with that diagnostic tool. So that's a great tool for anybody who has a question. If they're trying to at least get a couple of ideas of what it might be that's affecting their plant, is go to What's Wrong With My Plant and then put in the host plant or the plant that you're wondering about, in this case oaks, and then go ahead and look at the different symptoms and try to find one that matches what you're seeing. And you can kind of bounce back and forth if you're not sure, it might be one, you can check another one. So, and there's resources associated with those. So at least you can kind of look at that and say, oh, no, that's not what it is. Mine doesn't look anything like that. And then you can try to analyze that before you call in a professional in this case, or if it's something that you can cure on your own.
Okay.
So What's Wrong With My Plant? It's a great diagnostic tool from our pathologist, Michelle Grabowski, and our entomologist, Jeff Hahn.
Excellent. Thanks for bringing that up, Julie. Let's go back to the phones, then we'll grab some more text messages. Megan's calling from Woodbury this morning. Megan, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Julie. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
I have a question concerning aphids in the lawn. We had a pretty extensive aphid population last summer that drained all of the chlorophyll from our lawn. We did end up having to chemically treat in the end to get rid of it. But I'm just wondering if my lawn's going to come back or what I can do to help that this spring.
Good question. Aphids in the lawn. Boy, I've never seen that one before.
Wow.
But yeah, that would be really awful. aphids reproduce. Oh, there's a great word and I can't remember what it is. Essentially, the females reproduce on their own. And the females can, when they're carrying a female, that female can also be pregnant.
Whoa.
Yeah. Somebody will write in with the right
term. Yeah, with
term,
the right
I'm
terminology
sure.
for that.
At any rate, that's a kind of a tangent. But lawns, as we go into spring, the first thing is to stay off of the lawn until the soil is dry, because you'll compact that soil down. And once it's dry, then you can get out there and do some gentle raking. Rake up any dead, plant material that might be there. And then you can go ahead and treat your lawn with an early season fertilizer. And then let your lawn grow to about 3-3.5 inches. And it will green up really fast in the spring. And then mow it longer. Don't mow it so short. So wait till it gets to be about 4, maybe 5 inches long, and then mow. Set your mower at 3 or 4 inches, and then mow it short, and let those clippings lie on that grass. So keeping that lawn longer gives your grass more blade surface to photosynthesize, and that will put energy back into the roots, and it will also cause the roots to grow deeper. And when those roots grow deeper, they can grab more water, they can take up nutrients, and those blades shade those grass plants and keep them cool when we get into the hot time of summer. So the other thing, too, is longer lawns will shade out weed seeds, and weed seeds germinate by being exposed to sunlight. So if they're shaded, you're not going to have such a weed issue in your lawn. So those are some things you can do, really easy things. Just mowing your lawn longer, letting it go longer, not cutting it so short, will go a long way to helping those plants be healthier.
Yeah, good tip.
We also have great other stuff on our lawn, lawns and landscaping section about healthy lawn that you can read more, a little bit more about.
On the website.
On the website, yep, at extension.umn.edu.
Good deal. Good luck, Megan. Thanks for the call. Let's grab some text messages while we're at it. If you have a text for Julie, 81807. Texter has a variety of hydrangeas. I've left, they said, the blooms on for the winter. When and how do I cut them in the spring?
Okay, so hydrangeas, you can wait until those buds, you'll see the buds on the branches get fatter, and they'll start to kind of open up. Then it's called bud break. And that's when you can prune. That's when you should prune, or just slightly before that, when those buds are becoming evident. And you just want to select a point, a height for that plant, usually cut down about a third of it or so. And then just cut them all at about the same height so that the plant has a nice rounded form when it actually does leaf out. You just want to trim to right above a particular bud. So select one. Maybe it's, maybe you're going to cut everything around 2 feet. Tall, and just select a bud and cut right above the top of it.
Okay.
So that it's at the end of the cut branch.
Now, 81807 is the text number. If you want to call in your question for Julie, 651-989-9226. There's another text. I'm losing Scotch pines in our yard due to a fungus. Treatment has been ineffective. Will I be able, do you think, to ever plant another type of evergreen, or is that not wise?
Well, it depends what that fungus or bacteria issue has been. And you can send a sample. If you don't know what, you might know what it is since you've been treating for it. I'm assuming somebody knows what it is. And you want to know if that particular pathogen will affect all pines or if it only affects Scott pines. I'm guessing just the little bit that I know about the pathogens on pines, they affect all pines, and you might choose spruce at that point, or you might choose, a different type of evergreen for that area. But chances are, if it's something that affects all pines, you're not going to want to put pines in that location for a while, at least.
Okay. Let's see what else we have. Texter says a mini rose in the house. It's 3 years old. Actively
wow.
blooming, excuse
That's
me,
awesome.
Nearly 2 feet tall. Can I prune it way down?
Yeah, you could. You could prune it way down. I'm not sure why you'd want to. It sounds like it's doing great. But yes, you could prune it to a point, a node, a point where a branch or a leaf is coming off the stem. You can maybe selectively pruning it is a better way to think about it, where you're just taking down certain branches that maybe got a little bit longer than some of the other ones, and you want to just create a nicer form for it. So I would just, you know, take a look at it. If it's being a small miniature rose, you could put it on a Lazy Susan so you could turn it around and you could actually get a look from all around what it might look like. And then I would just do that selective pruning. I don't know if you could, why you'd want to take it completely down. It can't be that big. So, you could cut it all the way down. I don't think I would, because it's doing so great.
You know, we talk all the time, as well we should, about the Arboretum. A texter says, love, love, love the hosta area at the Arboretum.
Oh, yeah, the hosta glade. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to look at lots of different kinds of hostas, that's a great place to go and check out some of the old and new varieties that are there. And it also merges and blends right into the fern walk. So on a really hot summer day, that's a great place to go.
I bet it is. Let's go back to the phones, Julie. Alice in Rochester, I believe, is calling. Alice, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have rabbits eating my small lilac Chinese shrub.
Yep.
And my burning bush shrub.
Oh, yes.
Burning bush is about 6 feet high, so they're well seasoned. So I did have wire around the bottoms, but now the snow has gone up,
right.
So they've gone in. And when and what do I need to do?
Well, if you want to prevent them from eating more of your plant, you could put another layer of fencing. You could just wire it to the current fencing to make a taller fence. That's one thing. I'd do that for sure. And then in the summer, in the spring, when the plants you take down the fencing and the plants start to leaf out, then you want to make sure that those plants have enough water. So if we go into a drier spring, which I don't know if we will now with all this snow, it's hard to say, then you want to be sure that those plants are well watered. You want to mulch their root zone, so the base of the plant, so that you're protecting those roots, you're keeping them cooler, you're moderating the soil temperatures, and you're holding in moisture. And you want to do everything you can to make the growing environment great for those plants. The other thing is that if there's a particular branch maybe that the rabbits have gnawed on, and you think that you can prune that off, I would do that. I would just prune off that branch just to eliminate that large area of exposed branch that's been eaten away, because that can sometimes create some kind of an avenue for pests. So I would prune off, if it's possible, prune off some of those branches that have been gnawed on. But you want to keep that plant as healthy as you can. And then next year in the winter, put a bigger fence around it. We did not have this snow when we, for most of the winter. And then, boom, now we've got some places have like 30 inches of snow. And those rabbits, you know, they don't weigh very much. They sit right on top of there. And it's like, ooh, lunchtime. So those are some recommendations that I can make.
All right. We need to take a quick break, Drew. Thank you, Alice. We have more calls, more texts to help folks on this Saturday morning. It's called Smart Garden around every Saturday here on News Talk 830 WCCO. It's 2 above 0 in the Twin Cities. Good morning. Danny Long here with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. We're talking lawns and gardens, which we tend to do every Saturday in this hour.
You
right?
bet.
Yeah, we love it, too. All right. And we appreciate all the texts and phone calls we do get every week. There is a line open if you want to use that to ask your question, 651-989-9226. Tons of text messages. Let's dig into them here, Julie. Here's one that says, in anticipation of spring planting, have they come up with any soil treatment to treat the persistent mold that affects beautiful impatiens? I waited 4 years and again had to... hit.
Yeah.
Am I ever going to be able to plant them again ever?
So this texter is referring to downy mildew on impatiens. It's mildew that grows on the underside of impatiens, our impatiens walleriana, which is our shade impatiens that people have grown in the shade forever. And it is not a soil issue per se. It winds up in the soil, but it comes in on plants. It comes in, it was something that started, we think it started in the nursery industry, which the nursery industry jumped right on it. And there are some resistant varieties. Bounce is one that I can think of, the Bounce series. And there's others too. I'm not up on all of the different varieties, but you can talk to your local garden center and ask them for the resistant varieties of impatiens to the downy mildew. That being said, resistance does not guarantee 100% immunity to something, but they are less likely to be affected by that. And so I would suggest that you also look at some other shade plants that might be a good option. And you can talk to your garden center about that, but you can also look on our website. We have a Gardening in the Shade publication that has some plants you can start with. I mentioned some earlier in the season, or earlier in the show, that you could utilize as well. And I would maybe do fewer impatiens and separate masses of impatiens if you have a very large area with some other plants, just to break up the masses, so that if one plant comes in with it and it's a little less resistant, that it's not going to necessarily, affect all of them. But that downy mildew blows around and it resides in the soil, but there's no treatment for your soil for that, and that I know of. And so the idea is to buy resistant varieties.
Okay, here's a text, so Julie. I love my money plant, Texas says, but I'm getting no money from it. Ha ha, kidding. How do I repot the little shoots that are coming from the sides of the pot?
You could take the plant out of the pot and just, I think those shoots, you probably can just pull them away from it. They might just come apart. I've never divided a money plant, to be honest. If they have shoots, have roots coming off, you can trim them off. You can just take a nice sharp pruner and prune off a shoot and then go ahead and pot it up in a separate pot.
So there really is a money plant.
Yeah, there is.
There's a money tree.
I don't know the Latin name of it, but I can see it in my head.
All right. Interesting. Let's go back to the phones, Julie. John in Bloomington, I believe, is next. John, what's your question for Julie?
Yeah, hi. Is there anything that will take out quack grass? There's a product called Preventer, but does that just take it temporarily, or does anything that takes it out for good?
That would be a good thing to look up on our website. I don't know off the top of my head what that would be, but that would be something to check out on extension.umn.edu. Go to lawns and landscaping and go to our turf section on weeds. And that would give you any kind of a treatment for quackgrass.
Okay.
I think quackgrass is a perennial.
Different than crabgrass.
Yeah, different. Crabgrass is an annual. Quackgrass is a perennial.
Okay.
And I think that it's much harder to get rid of being a perennial.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So, yeah.
Check out the website, John.
Check out the website.
Let's see. Who's next? Steve is calling in from Brooklyn Park, I believe. Steve, you're on CCO with Julie.
Yeah, two questions. Good morning. Number one, it's 5 below here in Danbury, but it's going to get better. Two questions. Number one, I overwintered geraniums in a dry, cool spot inside of a brown paper bag.
Okay.
I want to know when I should pot that. And then the second thing is I have a lot of potting soil from previous years that I've never reused. Is there a way to prep that and reuse it?
Okay, the geraniums, I think you could probably pot those up almost any time. I would put them in a sunny window, start watering them, and they'll be a nice size when they go out. And you can prune off any kind of wanky branches or stems that look kind of weird. Prune off anything that died. And, yeah, I'd probably do that any time now. We're getting to that point. As far as the soil, the old soil, you could use that old soil in containers outside, and I would not use them inside for inside containers just because they could harbor any insects or pathogens that they've attracted over the time they've been outside, any molds and mildews that might be in there. But they could certainly be used for containers outside.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You could also compost it. You know, that's another option too.
Julia Texter says, how long do dry plant bulbs last in storage?
Oh, boy. It depends. If the bulb is really dried up, if it's shrivelly and dried up, I would compost that bulb. You want a bulb to be nice and firm and smooth and not have any mildew or mold on it. So you have to look at the bulbs. Also, the bulbs that are healthy are going to have some weight to them, whereas a bulb that's completely dried out is going to be weightless, essentially.
Somebody wants to know, how do I get a milkweed plant to have a milkweed garden?
Well, you can purchase milkweed plants from your garden centers. You can also purchase milkweed seeds, and they're a little harder to sprout, some of them. Like the orange milkweed can be a little difficult, might take a couple seasons. But yes, you can purchase plants. You can purchase small plants from a grower. You can purchase a large gallon, size pot. So lots of different options there.
Get to a garden center.
Yep, get to a garden center. Go look for a native plant nursery. We have a number of them in Minnesota. And a lot of our garden centers have native plant sections of their growing ranges.
Let's do a quick one here. We got less than 60 seconds. For those with small living quarters, can Julie speak to hydroponic gardening, types of plants to grow, flowers, vegetables, how to start such a garden?
That is not a small question.
Should we save it till next
time?
Yeah,
I would say I can make one suggestion is to go to our Department of Horticultural Science and look up Tom Michaels. He's one of our faculty. He did a hydroponic salad table. And he's got a web page on that. So I would start with that.
Okay, good. Do a lot of people do hydroponic gardening? You know,
It's becoming more and more popular.
It is.
Yeah, especially for growing greens and things indoors like this this texture mentioned.
Let's give the folks, in case they missed it, the website again.
Yeah, website, extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden, and we've got all sorts of different options there. And if you didn't get your question answered, you can go to Ask a Master Gardener and you can email that in or visit the Master Gardeners out at the Arboretum at the Let's Talk Plants desk.
It's worth the trip.
In the information center.
It's worth the trip.
Yeah.
All right, Julie. And when the abiders, when a week from today?
Week from today, February 23rd, 8 p.m., Billy's in Rockford.
And during Highway breaks, 55. During breaks on stage, Julie will answer a lot of garden questions.
Bring your plants. I'll check them out for you. No, just kidding.
All right, Julie. Thanks. Good to see you.
Thanks a lot.
Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota.